Hey, y'all, it's Garth.
I love the country music family. I love the country music family of artists and the country music family of songs. Some of the greatest artists to ever grace music are under the flag of country music. And some of the greatest songs in music history are under the flag of country music. The Big 615, you're going to hear the newest that country music has to offer. At the same time, you're going to hear the newest that the country classics have to offer. I want to hear the new single from George Strait, and I want to hear it right beside the new single from Luke Combs. And I think the country music family is one of those families that is very inclusive and wants both the established artists and the new artists to be side by side in this thing we call country music.
Download the TuneIn app from the App Store. That's TuneIn. And by the way, yes, it's free. You can also ask your device to play The Big 615 on TuneIn.
Are you ready?
Let's make some noise. Come on.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the latest edition of the Broad Street Line. I am Roy Burton. Alongside me, as always, my tag team partner and a man who after this show will be on the first thing smoking in Las Vegas for AEW's Double or Nothing event, one Chris Domingo. Mr. Domingo, how are you doing as always, as we say during this pandemic, this air quote Saturday morning, sir?
Oh, man, can't wait to watch Sabu again. Oh, wait, that was only a one-off. No, I cannot wait to see the four pillars, even though these pillars couldn't get no one cares about these pillars, man. Like what are pillars that are just irrelevant? No, I'm telling you, I think I get. And I'm not saying that they're not a relevant wrestling company. They are.
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
But are casual fans just not interested in this company?
All right. Well, let's say the question. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I'm glad you asked the question because I want to talk about it, but I don't want to alienate the other people who tune into the show. I like to save the wrestling stuff until the end of the show in most cases because I know most people tune in for us to talk Philadelphia.
Just the pop G-Sports. Rating. Just the pop rating.
Yeah. Just to pop the rating there. But no, we have other stuff to talk to. We will talk wrestling. I promise you, folks, later in the show. But we will before that give you the latest on the Philadelphia 76ers head coaching search, as the team begins to narrow down their options for next year as far as who's going to man the bench for them. We also have some NBA stuff to discuss as well. A lot of NBA news. The NBA finals are pretty much set as we're recording this and probably will be set by the time you hear this. So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the possible last game we may have seen from one LeBron Raymond James this past week. But other than that, we have some NFL stuff to talk about as well, including the worst rule change I have seen in my 44 years of life that was passed earlier this week. And I'm very upset about this. And I don't think it'll last more than a season, but we will talk about that and see what the
When you change a rule, it says, yeah, we're only going to change it for 1 year. That shows you they're not even that confident in the rule. What rule do you say? Yeah, man, we're gonna try this rule out for a year, and if it's trash, that shows you the rule is fundamentally flawed to begin with. If you're not willing to put it in ink, no, they're putting it in erasable pencil.
Yeah, no, they are not committed to this rule. The NFL is not committed to this rule. And I have some very harsh words, like a lot of people out on the internet,
like Travis Kelce
this past week. And I didn't hear what Kelce and Reed said, but I'm definitely intrigued by that. But we also have the Night of Champions preview to discuss as well. Plenty of stuff going on in both wrestling companies this past weekend, but that's later in the show. Before that, we have plenty of stuff to get to on this week's edition of the Broad Street Line. As we always say, sit back, relax, take a ride on the Broad Street Line. The future of sports talk radio has finally arrived. Any shout outs, sir?
No, let's just say the usual thank yous.
Thank you guys, as always, for listening to us here on 106.5 FM, WPPM LP Philadelphia, or wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, Spotify, YouTube Music. Just do a search, Spreaker. Just do a search for the Broad Street Line. Download us to your phone, your computer, your iPad, your MP3-enabled device. Listen to us at home or take us with you on the go. We are a very, very accessible show, 24/7, 365. And speaking of accessible, you can access all of our thoughts that we have on the internet if you follow us on the Twitter machine. Chris is at SKD215. I am at the BS line. This is a very special weekend here in the United States. It's Memorial Day weekend, so most people have Monday off, and a lot of cookouts and barbecues and all sorts of good things happening this weekend. Any plans for you this weekend as far as what you're doing or what you'll be tweeting about?
Oh, man, afternoon of champions for me.
Yes, afternoon of champions for one Chris Domingo. I'll be tweeting about the sweet, sweet, soulless, painful death that is the final game of the Chelsea season on Sunday. The final game
man,
of the
Premier are they going season. Down? Man, are they going down like sad boys or something or what?
No, that pack has been in the air for months now. They got stomped out by Manchester United 4-1 earlier this week. Could have really been like 6-1, 7-1.
Is that the team with Erling Haaland?
No, that's Manchester City. Who has won the Premier League this year? They are the Premier League champions, and they will get their just due on their final game on Sunday. Everybody plays Sunday afternoon in the Premier League game week 38, if you will, for those of you who are fans. So I'll be tweeting about that as a sad boy as Chelsea finishes their season. But we're here to talk about happy things, or what we hope to be happy things, and hope to be a team that will make good decisions this offseason. Yes, we were talking about your Philadelphia 76ers, who are beginning to narrow, hopefully, who are narrowing their coaching search down. According to John Clark of NBC Sports Philadelphia, Frank Vogel has interviewed for the Sixers head coaching job. I don't know if he was on the list of people that we mentioned last week. Probably should have been if he wasn't. But Frank Vogel has a title. I mean, he has a little bit of a pedigree in this league. Are you a fan of Frank Vogel being the next head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers?
I hate to be this guy, but does it matter?
The coach matters. Yes, the coach matters.
No, like after what, like, can a coach get any more out of this roster, this best player? Like, I don't know. Like, Mike O'Connor wrote this tremendous article that just said, they broke me. I'm done. Like, I don't know. There's literally nothing. No. And like, there's a lot of truth to that where I feel that, like, I don't know, like for even the most ardent Sixers process, whatever the heck you want to call them fans, the one Cameroonian hope was Joel Embiid. That was really always the kind of the shining light whenever things were going bad or like whatever. That's not the shining light no more. Mm-hmm. So what do Sixers fans do the Sixers fans have anything to lean on right now?
So you think that there's no sense of optimism in general among Sixers fans regarding Joel Embiid?
No, it's over.
I think it's faint. I think it's still there. Like we talked about before, like he's going to have to do a lot to get back in the good graces of most people when it comes to just kind of having people believe that the Sixers can do something next year. But it's like you should not, no one listening to this should give him the benefit of the doubt and just assume that he's going to play at an MVP level. He's going to get them to the conference finals. Like, no, he's got to show you.
I don't know. And obviously summer's long. You got free agency. You got you got the possibility of trades. How does a Sixers fan, whatever, Joe Sixers fan, James Sixers fan, get hyped for next season?
All right. Well, you have Joel Embiid, who's 29 years old. Just won an MVP. You have Tyrese Maxey, who had a fantastic season. He's 23 years old. I'm not sure exactly. 23 years old. Ideally, you do not have James Harden. I don't think any Sixers fans want James Harden. Whether you get something back for him or not, I don't know. That's another. But if you get something back, that's great. If not, that's fine. And I know it's not a lot to be excited about, but again, you could be excited about the last year of Tobias Harris. Next year is going to be
No, you set the table that like, I think that's my premise is that's why I said, does it matter who the coach is? Because right now you have a star player whose stock is at dirt low levels. You have basically a handcuff roster, regardless of whether you keep her. Like, I mean, it's S&M handcuffs if James Harden's on the team. Like, right. I don't know. That's like, and I feel like, I know, I feel that like right now I would say it's a crossroads because I think they're on the other side of the bad road. Like, I don't know. I feel that like, I don't know. even the most optimistic fan is really having a hard time trying to sum it up the usual optimism, because usually, like, I don't know, the Sixers fan base generally is more optimistic than I think it, the average fan base would be, because they just, frankly, they've leaned into this, and that the optimism is almost like part of, like, I don't know, like, I think Mike Levin said it in, like, it's part of their personality. Where, like, I don't know, a Sixers fan is part of their personality, so you can't just give that up. So, but the coach, what can, like, can a good coach, head coach hire, move that needle to the other side of the room?
I think you can, and I think that you're right. Like, it, like, if we're really being honest with ourselves, like there's really no, there's a very narrow path between this team and a possible conference finals appearance next year. Like, it's narrow. Like, whether, you know, Harden here or not, Tobias here or not, whatever. Like, the path to get there, it's a needle. It's like threading a needle. Like, it's very difficult. However, if you hire the right guy, and if he brings some level of optimism for the future, then that's important, right? Like, if you bring
you're already saying next year's a wash.
I'm like, again, in April, May, you know, the last week of May, sure, you know, get back to me the second week of July. Like, it might be different. Like, it might be different. Again, if you get something of value back for James Harden, that's different. If you get something back of value for Tobias Harris, that's different. As it stands right now, yeah, it's probably a wash.
If you're Daryl Morey, do you even entertain the idea of trading the MVP?
Well, yeah, and that's the point I wanted to get to, because a lot of people on the internet have been saying that the Sixers, everything should be on the table for the Philadelphia 76ers, including trading one Joel Hans Embiid. And I saw, I'm not sure, one of the national talking heads, somebody said, you know, trade Joel Embiid for Kawhi Leonard, which is insane, but we're not even going to discuss that one in particular. But I wouldn't for Kawhi. Why would you trade him for Kawhi Leonard? I mean, like, Kawhi Leonard, like, if you talk about, like, Joel Embiid doesn't play, Kawhi Leonard really doesn't play basketball games. Like,
no, you don't want to trade you know the only difference between one is one's a proven winner, one's not.
But one's a 31-year-old player who doesn't play. Like, he didn't play.
That's the thing. It's like, if you line
Joel Embiid just won the MVP. Like, what are we talking about? We're not
doing this. I really believe that, like, I don't know, like, you really have to give an honest assessment of Joel Embiid. It's like, he can't be the lead dog in on this team anymore. He would need to be a 1B. And I feel that, like, I don't know, there are these arguments where, like, usually teams don't trade a superstar unless they officially request a trade. And, like, Daryl Morey's not one to trade Embiid unless it's for a star. Why? Like, I don't know. Can we get a little proactive here and just say, because right now it feels like the hourglass has started on the days of our lives of the Joel Embiid era. And right now it's just, you're in this, like, kind of like waiting game. And frankly, it's not even like a waiting game where, like, you're on edge, because are people really going to be, like, heartbroken if he asks for a trade?
I don't think they'll be heartbroken if he asked for a trade. I think they would understand if he asked for a
trade. Yeah, no, but I feel like usually when a guy asks for a trade, his stature on the team, even Dame Lillard, like, I don't know, they haven't won squat. But you know what? He still got that alpha because, frankly, he didn't choke in the play. Like, that's what I think is just sitting with a lot. Well, me is I can't. I'll never get over Game 6 and 7 the way, like, I don't know, he just laid down. And there's really no explanation for it except he just didn't give it. He didn't care.
Right. Yeah, I completely agree. I can't, you know, it's going to be hard for you specifically and a lot of people to get past that. But you're not going to get equal value for Joel Embiid. Like, you're not going to get back – you need a lead dog. You're not going to get a lead dog back for Joel Embiid. So why would you trade Joel Embiid? Like, he's the closest thing that you have to a lead dog. He led the league in scoring. He's the MVP. He's 29 years old. You're like, you're not going to get equal value back. So what is the – other than the fact that, like you are resigned to the fact that he ain't it. All right, he might not be it. But, like, don't move him now when you can get – when you're getting 70 cents on the dollar.
Like, when he requests a trade, how many cents on the dollar are you getting then?
Well, it's probably going to be more. I would imagine more than 70. Like, this is like, you're not gonna get it. Like, what would you realistically, like, assuming everybody's available, like, let's say everybody's available, what could you get back for Joel Embiid today?
I'm saying if his value is 70 cents on the dollar right now and he hasn't asked for a trade.
I'm just saying, what would you get back?
No, but what happens when he asks for a trade? Would you rather get 50 cents on the dollar when he asks for a trade? Well, no, I guess the question is, would you rather keep him on 70 cents on the dollar just to keep him? Just to keep him because he's a star. Like, because that's the rationale. You don't give up stars, period. Right. Like, unless they're saying, please get me out. Right. Or do you get proactive? And I've always been a proactive guy because you have milked this crew for every ounce of blood, everything you have. So that's I'm a big, let's rip the Band-Aid off. Because right now you are covering a wound with a Dollar General, gauze right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at some point it's going to bleed. What are you going to do?
So you're just like, you know what? Just rip it off. Just deal with it. You know, mire in the muck for the next couple of years until you figure it out. Like that.
Because but what are the Sixers miring in right now? Not the muck, but it's right. How much better is it than the muck?
No, and listen, the word, we've talked about this before. The worst thing to be in the NBA is to be in the middle, right? Like, the word, like, if you're like, if you're not good enough to be in the, like, if you're not good enough to make a deep playoff run, you want to be in a lottery because you want the chance to get a guy who can help you win that playoff run. But if you're a perennial first and second round losing team and you figure to be, that's the worst place to be in the NBA. Like I get it.
I feel that right now, if you lose Embiid, you're like, I don't think you'll be, will you be like, if
you'll
you
be
get.
You'll be terrible.
No, but if you get 65, say you got that Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero,
oh,
and
God,
stuff.
No, you would stink. That team would stink.
No, but would you be top five terrible?
No, you wouldn't be top five terrible. You would stink. I don't know what like, you would have to just let those contracts like run out and just die. But I mean, like, how many years are you gonna do? Like Tyler Hero just got paid, right? Not too long ago. Like, how many years are you gonna, like, you're gonna pay Tyler Hero $30 million, you're gonna pay Tyrese Maxey $40 million, and you're just gonna be that 38-44 team for like 3 or 4 years? Like, what's the point of that?
No, if you were the GM, what would you do?
But what I you let Harden walk. I think you just play this out. Like, you let Harden walk. Ideally you get something back, but whatever. You try to move Tobias. Ideally you get something of value back or whatever. You just gotta get this money off your books. And you got it. You have to. As a GM, I would say, look, next summer, I'm like, look, Joel Embiid is still in his prime. You got Tyrese Maxey. He's coming into his own. We got some money on the books. We got a coach that, you know, is implementing a decent, whoever this is implementing, you know, a more offensively, you know, minded system. Try to get somebody to come in, because I haven't looked at next year's free agency, you know, crew. Like, I know this year's a free agency crop is terrible, but maybe next summer, maybe you can find that. If you don't think Joel Embiid's the one guy, maybe you find the one, and Joel Embiid can be the 1A. But I think you just let this money come off the books, and you try to find somebody to run with Embiid next year, next summer.
But do you try to cajole Joel and say, we're going to do our best to put a star next to you? Or are you just saying, you know what, you're here, you're making 40, you're the MVP, we're doing our thing, you choked. Like, no, I'm trying to think, like, no, I'm trying to think when you, like, because this is a very unusual position for an elite player to be in. Because usually elite players don't choke. Like, I don't know, like, they might have underwhelming series or, like, they were okay.
Right.
They don't lay down like that. And, like, that's where I think, like, does Embiid, like, care to use his influence, or should he?
Well, he said he was upset when he didn't know that Doc Rivers got fired. But quite frankly, again, if you are the MVP and you go out like that in the second round, and you continually go out like that in the second round, then we don't need to run stuff by you, man. Like, you don't get that. you don't get the courtesy of me calling you before I call Doc Rivers and say, hey, man, we're going in a different direction. Like, Joel Embiid, like he's just got to deal with it, man. Like, if I'm Daryl Morey, if I'm the GM, no, I'm serious. Like, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm like,
no, listen, but so if you're Daryl Morey, you don't You don't owe the MVP any courtesy.
You don't owe him. You don't owe him anything. Now I'm sure they'll give him some, but you don't owe it to him because he hasn't given you what has he done to show you that you owe it to him?
And you know what? That is the right point of view because, frankly, they've done this too many times. Whether it's Embiid, whether it's Harden, whether it's Ben Simmons, I'm telling you, I've said it. This is a losing organization that. And this is what, if you read that process book, this is what did not factor in when you were trying to build star players, is you basically put all your chips in finding these dudes and never held them accountable, ever.
Right.
Like, ever. And this is, this is where I think, this is where they got the process wrong, was they were just all in on assets and not worried about the human element, where they are just... Because, I don't know, anytime Brett Brown wanted to discipline Ben Simmons, let's bring in his brother. If Joel Embiid, got weight issues. Right. This is where maybe, just maybe, a coach, and maybe this is a good thing because Embiid doesn't have any room to bitch anymore. Unless you tell the coach, no, you got to treat Joel the same, where you say, yo, you're coaching everyone the same way, or say, you got to hold these dudes accountable, then maybe this is this can change things, but I don't see that.
Yeah, that's what I was saying initially. This is why the coach matters. You said it doesn't matter. Well, if you bring in a guy who's just going to just lay down the law, whether it's Frank Vogel or whoever, who's going to say, this is my way, this is the way we're going to do things, it matters because it sets the tone again that the organization is more important than a guy. And it sets the tone that, again, maybe, you get a guy who can, develop an offense, a better offense for Tyrese Maxey to thrive or Joel Embiid to thrive or whatever, whoever you bring in, you just set the tone with that guy that you bring in this summer. So I think it's very important. Doesn't sound like that guy is going to be Monty Williams, according to a friend of the show, Jake Fisher. It looks like Monty Williams might take next year off because he's still owed 3 years and $21 million from the Phoenix Suns. So he might take next year off from coaching. He might be out of the mix. Doc Rivers and Nick Nurse are finalists for the Phoenix Suns head coaching job. So Nick Nurse might be out of the mix for the Sixers, but I think we'll get a little bit more clarity next week when we're on the show. Is there any of the people that have been named or have been rumored, or maybe not even rumored, just people out there? Is there anybody in particular that you would prefer for this head coaching gig?
I think people haven't realized that the Sixers job is down the line. I don't know. You got Phoenix. You got Milwaukee. You got, those two jobs. Yeah.
Toronto's worse, but.
I could say definitely Milwaukee and Phoenix are significantly better jobs than Philly.
Agreed.
And so that means you're probably, Milwaukee is getting their preferred choice. And, if you just lined up these coaches and said, okay, give me – warp level team with warp level ego and talent, I'm taking Nick Nurse over all of them. I feel that I would say he's like a Thibodeau, but he's not shy to be combative with the players, which frankly I think this team needs desperately. Mm-hmm. They need they need someone to tell them when they suck, and I feel that Doc Rivers has always been this guy that's gotten this, and I feel player coach is just a term for you can get kind of you need someone I feel that that player's coach is a fine line where when you try to discipline someone, he looks at you sideways. When you tell him not to go somewhere during the week, during the playoffs, where you're just oh, you're going to be a disciplinarian now. That's where I think that player coach thing gets a little, blurry. So, but this team needs discipline in the worst way. They need accountability. So I would say Nick Nurse. However, I don't think Nick Nurse will be there. Will be available.
Yeah, and I agree. I think Nurse, like you said, he clearly has a choice at this point of options where he wants to go. It's probably going to land at Phoenix if I had to guess. So if Nick Nurse is not there, I guess probably for me, Budenholzer is probably number two on that list. Last on the list is D'Antoni, but other than that, we can work with the other guys.
No, who I'd say is probably it's crazy to say because I don't like, because if like, and I'm not, and I wasn't even a big proponent of Monty Williams, because the way his teams went out, that's a little sketchy. Like, I don't know, they lost by 50 to the Mavs last year. I'm gonna go with Frank Vogel. Like, I don't know, like, he's coached LeBron. Like, I don't know, he's got some cachet to say, yo, I've coached LeBron James, I won a championship. I mean, I'll be
Doc had cachet as well.
Yeah. So, but I feel this is like, I feel that, like, I don't know, there, other than Nick Nurse, there aren't any super, I feel like Sam Cassell would be a decent, like, an okay choice, but I feel he's got too much Doc stank on him. Where, like, I don't know that, like, no, I feel like, I don't know, he's got some residual Doc stuff.
Yeah,
that,
no, you're right.
Like, I don't know, like, but I don't know. That's where, that's why I asked at the beginning of the show. It, like, I don't know, other than Nick Nurse, is Frank Vogel getting the troops excited? He's not.
Yeah, no, probably not. And speaking of Doc Stank, that's why I was like, they haven't even released, at least in the London news, they haven't even interviewed Dave Yeager, but he's probably got Doc Stank as well, you know, since he's been on the bench for a couple of years. Yeah, no, like I thought Doc, you know, when Doc came in, I was like, oh man, he's got the cachet, you know, because he coached the Celtics and, you know, KG and Paul Pierce and Ray Allen and all that stuff. That clearly didn't matter to these guys.
I think the problem is he's got so much losing. He's done so much losing since he's gone to Boston. People forget that. Like, I think a lot of, like, no, because he's done a lot of losing. Like, no, a and lot. Under cheat, like, no, and under, and this is my biggest fundamental problem with the Sixers the last few years. They've underachieved every year. Like, I don't know. We've expected them to hit A. They don't hit A. I mean, and that's, like, I don't know. Like, they've, like, the, I can't remember last time they matched expectations. What, 2019?
I don't think they've beaten a losing, beaten a higher seed in the playoffs, and then in this current iteration of the Sixers going to the playoffs every year. Like, I don't think they've beaten a higher seed any of these years, these 6 years that they've flamed out either in the first or second round. I think they've always been, whenever they won, they've always been the higher seed. So yeah, so like the most basic of expectations, beat the teams that you're better than, like, they've been able to do for the most part. And then of course they flame out in the second round and you know, five out of the last 6 years. Now this is a wildly underachieving team. And I think you're right. I think Sam Cassell has, again, use your term, the Doc stink on him. But I mean, like, I think on some level, like you got to get another guy in here. It's like, look, man, I won a title, whether it's Nick Nurse or Budenholzer or Vogel or something. It's like, look, man, I've won a title. I've coached a superstar. I understand what it takes to get there. All right. I know you didn't want to listen to that dude because he had a whole lot of Clipper seasons under his belt, but you might want to listen to me. Maybe this works this time.
And also, Roy, I think you need to get rid of some of this player dynamic. I'm sorry. Tobias Harris is a loser. Like, there are enough not coincidences of the last 4 or 5 years of the same dudes being on the same team and they're choking. And B, Tobias. Because I hear that stuff every year from Dubai. Oh, we're not mentally tough. Because you're not mentally tough. You're not mentally tough. Like, I don't, like this is, like, the bothersome part. And, I mean, you know that look when, like, P.J. Tucker is screaming at Embiid? Should a role player on your team be screaming at you to, like, get motivated?
Shouldn't take it. Yeah, no, you wouldn't see, you know, if he was
Giannis, did P.J. Tucker have to yell at Giannis when he was in Milwaukee? Does he have to yell at Jimmy?
P.J. Tucker didn't have to yell at Giannis. D'Angelo Russell didn't have to yell at LeBron. I don't know. Rando player on the Raptors, you know, back in 2019, didn't have to yell at Kawhi. I mean, you're like, no, man. Like this shouldn't happen. And I was anti the P.J. Tucker signing when it happened. But again, just imagine if P.J. Tucker wasn't on this team this year. And imagine if he wasn't on that team specifically in the semifinals. Like, this team would have got destroyed. Like, this team would have had absolutely zero heart outside of maybe Tyrese.
No, Maxey, but I think the problem is you're asking a 38-year-old role player to eradicate an entire culture of losing. That's not happening. Like, I don't know. You need – and this is another thing about, like, I don't know, the structure of this. Daryl Morey, what the hell's he ever won? And, like, a lot of his teams never had this, like, full account. But this is, I'm sorry, the fundamental problem with the Morey Hinkie asset, treating these things like I don't know, commodities. Like, they're not, like, I don't know. Like, I hate to bring up that team at South Florida. Hate it. But you know what? When you got a dude, and he could, and who literally has a bag of rings to show recruits. When he, no, like, that's how you do it. But also, Riles has won a lot. So is Spout. Like, that's a thing where I think Miami just, like, people are saying, oh, but why doesn't every other team try to do what the Heat did? Because they can't. Because they don't have a dude that's been a part of like 25% of the championships in the NBA since he's been in there. You don't have a guy who's won two titles with LeBron. And that's where, and I don't know if you can, if the Sixers can do that mid run. No. Like, you, this is something you need to, like, I don't know. When you blow this up, or, like, I don't know, reset it, because you're going to reset soon. You need to assess, yo, who's the dude that, like, can hold these people accountable? And, like, you probably had a guy with Brett, but he was a rookie head coach with zero support from anybody. Like, he was there just, like, because really, he should have been the guy, because he came up from San Antonio. He knows how to win. But when it's your first rodeo and you just have chaos in your life every day, you can't do that.
Yeah, no.
That's where the process is just, like, I don't know, because they let the players run the ship.
And the thing is, and I said this way back when excuse me, when Hinkie got here, because I know a lot of people, and no offense to Hinkie, I mean, he did what he did, he got some assets. But the thing is, if you want to build a winning culture, like, it probably helps to bring in guys from a winning culture. And all due respect to Sam Hinkie, who, you know, learned at the knee of Daryl Morey. But Daryl Morey ain't never win nothing in Houston. And Sam Hinkie didn't win anything when he was here. And Daryl Morey ain't win nothing when he was here. Like, you need to bring in those kind of guys, like you said, like a Brett Brown type of guy. I don't know Brett Brown specifically, but a Brett Brown type of guy who, again, who knows how to win, who knows what a winning culture is. Like, Eric Spoelstra was sitting there cutting videos back, you know, the early years when Dwayne Wade was winning before the big three got there. So he understands the winning culture in Miami. Like, he understands what it is. Like, he could walk in to the room now and say, look, I won two titles with Shaq, with LeBron. We got to the finals every year that him, Wade, and Bosh were here. Like, you know, whoever, Gabe Vincent, you know, Tyler Hero, whoever, like, this, you go by the Heat culture or you walk. It is what it is.
And no,
like,
but
that,
I think
that has gravity.
But I think people want to point to, like, Oklahoma City, where, like, they kind of done the similar thing. But you know what they've never done is forsake culture over the assets. Where, like, I don't know, they bring in dudes, they bring in the Shays, they bring in, like, the Giddies that aren't just commodities. They're, like, winning players. Like, I don't know, like I don't, like, I'm sorry, Roy. All the dudes, all the guys that the Sixers brought in, they weren't winning players. Nerlens Noel was not a winning player. He was just an asset.
But you didn't know that Nerlens Noel wasn't a winning player at the time.
Like,
you didn't
know. But I feel like they just overshot on the potential without doing intangible work. It's like anti-Eagles.
No,
where,
see,
like,
I think,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I feel that, like, I don't know. The Sixers just overwent with potential, where, like, they just didn't do a deep dive and, like, yo, what's this? What makes this dude tick? Like, I don't know. Like, Jahlil Okafor. Like, why? Like, you had all these centers, but in the same breath, you still brought this dude in with, like, zero thought of, like, organizational fit or culture. Why?
Yeah, because, like you said, because, like, at the time, he was the greatest asset they could acquire with that pick. Like, I think
you proceeded to speed and beat up people like that. Like, but this is what, like, people didn't, like, and I'll say it, and, like, these process people can, like, go to heck. No, like, when you give these kids so much adversity off the rip, you're just, like, asking for disaster. And I feel that, like, I mean, that process book is just the Bible for me. Like, I always reference it when I, like, think I don't know what I'm talking about. It's like, you just started this, like, I don't know, like, you need, because who was the central figure in all that? Hinkie? He was, like, I don't know, he was collected, like, as, like, NFTs.
No, see, the problem, and I agree with, I hear everything you're saying, but I think the bigger problem was, like, you didn't have enough structure behind these guys. You didn't have, again, like, I hate to be the Heat culture guy, but you didn't have a guy saying, like, yo, This is what champions do. This is championship behavior. Because, like, there was knucklehead stuff with Nerlens Noel, if you remember. There's knucklehead stuff with Jahlil Okafor. There was, you know, weight stuff with Joel Embiid. I mean, there's, like, all, like, half of these guys have had, like, stuff, like, non-professional stuff. Whereas if you had an organization, which you, if you had a Greg Popovich type of figure, not saying him, but if you had a type of figure, say, you either do it the right way, the championship way, or you're gone, then maybe some of the stuff would have turned out differently. But I think they just, like, let these kids – again.
Yeah, no, because they didn't think that was important. They thought getting the assets and cultivating the assets in their own way. Not right. Like, I don't know, winning basketball. Just like, no, right. That's where, I mean, like, that's where the process failed. And honestly, you could see the fruits of that failure for the last few years. It's not a win. They don't have winning DNA. They haven't brought in winning players in free agency. I mean, honestly, there haven't, like there were more winning players on the 17-18 team than there have been in, like, the last 3 or 4 years.
I don't know if they
like, I could say TJ McConnell was a pretty winning player. I can even say a Covington was a pretty winning player. He's like in the last few years, who'd you bring? Like, I don't know if Seth Curry's a winning player. Like, I don't, like, no. Like, I just he's don't
as much as TJ McConnell for sure. Or as
yeah,
much as
but like sure, there yeah. aren't, but when you see, like, you could say, is Tobias Harris a winning player?
Well, of course not. Yeah, no.
is Ben Simmons a winning player?
We're not. I mean, like, this is low hanging fruit. Obviously, no, it's not.
Right. Yeah, no, but I mean, like, you see what I'm saying? It's like they just disregarded that. We're like, well, there's like,
well,
yo,
whose, well,
no.
whose fault is that though? That's the GM's fault.
No, I think
it starts with the front.
No, that's the fault. Yeah, no, it does, because they think that we're so talented, we're going to just defeat culture. We're like the Heat, like, and that is dead the wrong philosophy to win any sport. And that's where this whole super team thing has gotten teams just fried, because they're just trying to just bring in, no. I mean, what's the last super team that succeeded? They don't anymore.
Yeah, the super team thing is done. Like, you need two good players. But, I mean, like, more important than any of that, like, you need a solid winning culture. Like, you need guys committed to, again, regardless of the sport, you need guys who are committed to a culture, committed to doing the things that make teams champions. Like, again, like, we're done with the team, like, three or four guys linking up and super teaming it up. Like, that doesn't matter. Like, none of that matters anymore. Like, you look at a team like the Heat. Half their guys in the rotation are undrafted guys, like, you know, like, guys drafted late in the first round or second round picks. But again, they have this culture that, you know, they can go with, you know, Victor Oladipo goes down, Tyler Hero goes down, you know, they lose to Atlanta in the play-in, like, they just keep on rolling, and they roll all the way to the NBA finals.
They signed Kyle Lowry to a $90 million contract and somehow absorbed it to say, that would be a death knell to almost every other team in the NBA where, like, you just are getting nothing from one of your most, that happened to the Sixers. It's Tobias Harris. You are just not getting equally and all the guys they signed at the deadline were. Kevin Love's been watched for a while. Cool. But you know what? They found they just said, you know what, Kev? We know you don't do much. We know you're old. But we're going to just let you do what you do best. Because they're just going to say, you know what? Throw some outlet passes. Give us some rebounding. No, because a lot of teams don't put these old dudes in position to succeed. They're saying, yo, be the old Kevin Love.
Right.
Where they're just saying, yo, just you know what? Give us – because you know what? You can say a lot about Kevin Love. Kevin Love's a winning player. He's been on championship teams. He's been on teams that got to the finals, like, all this. That's where – I mean, what players on the Sixers have ever been to a finals?
Other than Tucker?
PJ Tucker?
I think that – is that it? That might be it. It's probably it.
That can't be. That just doesn't make any sense.
Well, maybe hopefully they bring in a coach – who has some finals experience, who can bring that you know, like you said, championship DNA to this team. But we'll figure out what's going on with that and with the James Harden situation as well. The Sixers, according to Brian Windhorst, don't seem all that motivated to give him $50 million a year, which is very good. But again, we won't have any answers for that probably for a couple more weeks. Speaking of the NBA, as we record this, the Nuggets have already swept the LA Lakers in the Western Conference Finals, and the Heat are currently up 3-1 on the Celtics. And as I mentioned, we'll probably win the Eastern Conference Finals. No team has ever come back from a 3-0 deficit in the conference finals in NBA history. So it looks like we're going to get Nuggets Heat in the NBA finals. We can wait on talking about that for a second. But let me ask you a question, because some very important news came out after the Nuggets game 4 win over the Lakers. We found out that LeBron James was considering, or is considering, a retirement after 20 years in the NBA.
Conveniently came out after his team got swept.
After a year where he averaged 29-8-7 at 38 years old. But we did learn this week, according to Sham Sharania, that he is dealing with a foot injury that will require surgery in the offseason. But as soon as the Lakers got swept, LeBron was like, yeah, man, this might be it. Now, he had talked for years about playing with his son, Bronny James, who is currently or is going to USC this year. But he said, you know, I want to play with Bronny. Bronny might not want to play with me. That desire might not be reciprocal. So maybe I won't stick it out for another couple more years to play with Bronny. So you think in your heart of hearts that LeBron James announcing his possible retirement is just a ploy? Well, it's a ploy for what? Let me ask you. Well, why did he?
That was my response to you. What does LeBron James have to play for anymore? Like what? Like it, because I saw this insanity where he would like play for the Warriors. Why? Why? Like why does he need another phony championship? Like that would count as like a 0.22 championship. Like what? Like what would anyone care about that championship?
LeBron says he only plays for championships. If LeBron went to the Warriors, they'd probably win the championship. And if he went to the Warriors, they would have a better chance to win the championship than whatever they do, whatever the Lakers do this offseason. So if he only wants to win championships, probably the best place for him to go this offseason would theoretically be the Warriors. I understand it. I don't think he's going to the Warriors. I don't think this was a play to go with his BFF Draymond. Like, I don't think that's what it was.
No, but I guess, like, what is LeBron trying, like, because he's very big on his legacy. Is he still trying to hold out hope to, like, take over in the minds of lunatics, someone?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So he still feels like that is in play. And he feels like, I hope the hell he doesn't think winning a championship with the Warriors supplants him over MJ.
What if he won two? No, I'm not trying to be funny. What if he won two? If he goes for four different franchises, he wins titles. Like that counts for something. Like that's a pretty impressive. Again, I know this, it's kind of fugazi, but he is 38 years old. I mean, like, you know, he's like this dude shouldn't be carrying the water for these two titles. But if he goes to the Warriors and wins a title, maybe two titles, that counts for something, even at 39 and 40 years old.
Yeah, no.
This ain't Durant going to the Warriors in his prime. Like this is different.
But I feel like he'll be what, the second best player on the team?
He'll be second best. Yeah, I would imagine second best. Yeah, sure. That counts.
Like, no. But on the flip side, what if he doesn't win a championship? How bad does that look for him?
If he leaves LA, you have to win. If you leave LA just to championship hunt at 39 years old, I mean, and don't win, that's a bad look. But I mean, look, he's all-time legend anyway, so it doesn't matter. Like he's in the room, he's in the VIP section of the club already.
Yeah, but if your goal is still try to eclipse Michael Jordan, don't you have to factor that in? What if I don't win?
Yeah, but I mean, like, but the thing is, like, what is my best chance to eclipse Michael Jordan? What is the best chance I have to win a title and go somewhere else? Because I think you would agree that, but he has a better chance of doing that than staying with Anthony Davis.
But I just don't know how much that championship means in the whole scheme of things. Like, I don't know. It's a lack championship. Like, I don't know. Like, he's
39 like, next year.
No, like I okay. no, and like I don't know. Like I know his legacy is wonderful, but you know what? His legacy that I hate is this bouncing around, trying to like, finagle a ring out of it. It's stupid. And it's wet. Like, I don't know. It basically ruined the legacy of Kevin Durant because how many times is Kevin Durant going to bounce around and not win anything before he's like, okay, I probably should have stuck with one team. No, yeah. I mean, like if Kevin Durant doesn't win with Phoenix, his legacy is whack.
It's not whack. You got to stop. It's not whack.
No, his champion. His winning legacy. Because what's he won?
Yeah, like yeah,
two he, championships he has, with the greatest team.
Yeah,
two Fugazi championships.
Yeah, he has two titles and two Finals MVPs. It's not whack. But again, like you said, it's not full 100% titles. Like you don't think of his titles as you think of like Giannis's title with the Bucks, or you know any other you know. Whoever wins this year, like you wouldn't think of it on the same level, obviously, because it was a super team at that point. It's not whack, but it's just not, you know, a full note.
Someone said, is Durant a top 15 player of all time?
I don't think he's top 15. He's probably top 20. I think he's outside of 15, but he's top 20. He's top 20.
We'll do this exercise in the summertime.
I know. Speaking of top guys. I'm glad for the segue because Carmelo Anthony retired this year after 19 seasons. 11th all-time in scoring, 6-time All-NBA, most decorated men's basketball player in U.S. history, won a title with Syracuse. Obviously, he's a basketball Hall of Famer, first ballot in the Naismith Hall of Fame in Springfield. If you had to put a number on where Carmelo ranks all-time, what would it be?
You don't want to hear my opinion.
I know your hashtag rings. I understand that. And Carmelo Anthony.
I'm hashtag wing anything. Has Carmelo Anthony ever won anything other than the championship at Syracuse?
We count gold medals or no? I'm saying he's the most decorated men's basketball. NBA, fine. NBA. No, of course not.
He's like a top 60-ish player.
That's fine. I mean, I'm not mad at it.
I feel like, I don't know. Like these numbers don't mean – I wish we had our non-Eps. These numbers don't mean jack to me anymore. Like, oh, he's seventh all-time in points. He played forever. What do you expect?
11th all-time in scoring is impressive. I guess that's a really good number. Now, like you played for a lot of years. You know, he played in the 3-point era, so like obviously his numbers are skewed.
And
he jacked up a ton of shots. Yeah.
Who would be his contemporary in another era? Would you call him Dominique in another era?
Oh no, I would say he's probably to me, he's always been the modern day George Gervin. Or maybe no, Alex English-ish.
He's not better than Vince Carter.
No.
Okay.
I don't think he's.
So basically, he's you're saying Carter. He was just a one-trick pony, a very good one-trick.
A really good trick. Yeah, it's a really good trick. Okay. But he's just like Carmelo Anthony got buckets. Okay, that's great. Again, on some level, you gotta win. Like it's you know it's like
yeah no like, I Tracy feel McGrady like I don't got know buckets, like,
but okay, but on some level, Tracy McGrady
no,
got to win.
Is he higher than Tracy McGrady?
100%. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I mean, part of that was McGrady. McGrady got hurt a little bit. So, like, McGrady probably would have been Melo if he just stayed healthy. But, yeah, like he's higher than McGrady. But, yeah, they're both top 50-ish players. Well, not McGrady.
Does he have an automatic spot in the NBA 75? I'll say until the end of this decade, 2029.
He's 11th all time in scoring. We're not doing that. Like, yeah, he's like, okay. Yeah. He's NBA 75. He's NBA 100. He's NBA whatever next one they do. He's always going to be on there. He's always going to be like, for the next 20 years, he's going to be a top 20 all time scorer. You can't not have that dude in the thing.
Whenever I think of great players, I think of moments. Does Carmelo Anthony have any moments?
Three to the dome with the Knicks, man. You know, even though the Knicks ain't winning.
Or saying FOH. No, I feel like I don't know. Like he just put up a lot of numbers, signifying really nothing. I'll just say it.
I don't disagree. He got buckets. Does the buckets turn into wins? No, not necessarily. But he got buckets. Again, like he had the garden jumping for a while. He got the Nuggets to the conference finals. I mean, he had a couple of decent little runs, but Carmelo Anthony got buckets. That's all that it is. So
I'm saying there have been a lot of people that have got buckets that have meant more, that have done like that have won a little more. Like Iverson. Iverson was just a bucket, but you know what? He actually he overachieved a lot with mediocre team. Like, I never got that sense of Carmelo. And you know what? People don't want to admit it. Iverson made a couple players better. And, like, I never, ever got that sense from Carmelo Anthony. He never made anybody.
No. Iverson elevated a wildly mediocre team to the NBA Finals. That year aside, I mean, those Sixers teams probably weren't talented enough to, you know, win playoff series, but they won playoff series a couple times. I mean,
how many years did those Iverson teams overachieve? Like, even if it was winning a round bunch of times where, like, they were the underdog in the first round and won. That's what makes me want to, like, put my head through a wall about the Sixers team is they just underachieve in every sort, in every fashion.
Yeah, no, they've done basically the bare minimum that, you know, 2 seed, 3 seed, well, they were 1 seed, you know, not too long ago and didn't even do the bare minimum when it comes to beating teams that are worse than you. We only have a few minutes left. I do want to talk about, you were talking about one rule change that the NFL made. I was talking about the other rule change that the NFL made that made me upset. I don't care about the fair catch thing was inside the 25. Do not care about that at all. It's whatever. They're going to get rid of kickoffs in the next 5 or 10 years. That's fine. I am upset, highly upset at the Thursday night flex scheduling coming to the NFL this year. This is ridiculous. I have no idea. No, you can't have teams play multiple Thursday night games a season. This is insanity. This is insane. And not only that, you got people, us included, who make plans to go to these games, to travel to these games, to say, hey, man, me and my boys, we're heading down to, you know, I don't know, whatever, LA in December to catch the Eagles versus the Rams, whatever it is. People can't even do that the last month of the season. Like, that's over. Like, you cannot plan for any game to travel to any game in the last month of the season because you have no idea when it's going to be played. None.
Aren't we the same people that say, oh, these Thursday night games are trash?
They're trash. Oh, they're terrible games. But
what would you rather have? Like a chance for a competitive game or them all to be trash?
Trash. No, give me no, seriously. Like, okay. I do not want, like, I want, try. I would give me terrible games. Give me the week before Christmas. Give me a terrible game. If it's Browns Ravens and they're terrible, give me a terrible game. Like, having a team play multiple Thursday night games in the season is a wild competitive disadvantage. Cause some teams don't even play on Thursday. Don't play on Thursday at all during the season. So they even have two short weeks.
Like, no.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how they make this as not ridiculously unfair as it appears it's going to be.
There's no way to do it, man. Like if the Eagles have 2 short weeks and let's say the Browns don't have any short weeks or just whatever, like, that's not fair. Like, it's a wild disadvantage when it comes to scheduling these teams. So I am not a fan. The fair catch thing is whatever. Because like I said, like, they're going to get rid of kickoffs and it is what it is. It's fine. Like, you know, player safety. I'm here all for player safety, which is why I hate these Thursday night games getting flexed, because this is silly. But the NFL, you know, as Mark Cuban said, you know, was it pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered? None of this matters because we're all, you know, suckers. We're all going to watch these games anyway, whether you flex them or not.
Of course we are. Like, the NFL is the only thing where people actually, like, just complain to the nth degree, but do nothing to back it up. Zero. No, there is no backup. There is no Target-esque, Bud Light-esque boycotting. No. Like, I don't even think people pretend to boycott anymore. They're not even saying to boycott. They just scream in the abyss.
Yes.
Feel like, I don't know, feel they got it off their chest, say, yeah, I feel like a better person. And you know what they do? Honey, let's grab some pizza for the Thursday night games.
Exactly. Yeah, no, they're going to watch. Like, I'll be mad. Like, if the Eagles game gets flexed, one of those December games, I'll be very upset, and I'll feel bad for the people who planned trips to go to whatever city to entertain for that game or whatever. But you know what I'll do? I'm going to turn on Amazon and watch it because I'm a loser. Because, again, there's certain things where I just, you know, like my moral compass is strong.
No, but I mean, no, I think Bomani Jones said it.
Yeah,
it's so eloquently. He's like, you know what? We can't, like, I don't know, like, us trying to be this, like, completely 100% moralistic people is just not realistic. Like, you're just not going to be on the right side of ethics every time. And you know what? Acknowledge it. Like, I don't know. Like, that's what – we're human. Like, that. This is, like, the downside of, like, the internet and social media performative. Because really, that's, like, all this is like, looking good for your like 500 followers you've never met in your life. Oh man, here, 14 likes for, oh my God, I think what the NFL is doing is terrible. Oh my God, the girl who I like, no, I mean, it's all performative and like, just, I would just touch some grass, breathe some air and just live your life, seriously.
No, you said it better than I could say it. We have about 5 minutes left, so it's time. I don't know if we'll get to your Four Pillars match preview for Double or Nothing, but we do have some time for a little bit of Night of Champions talk as the WWE heads back to Jeddah, Saudi Arabia this week for their Night of Champions premium live event. You said acknowledge me. It's time to acknowledge Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa as the possible unified tag team champs after they take on Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in one of the triple main events on the card. Really quick, because I know there's three main events. How do you think this world heavyweight title match goes down between Rollins and Styles? I think we talked about it a little last week. And what happens in the tag team match as well?
I think that, I don't know, the tea leaves are like, the interviews make too much sense. These kind of, like, I don't know. I think they make sense, but maybe this is a bigger build to at something else. I don't know. But I'm going to go with my gut and say Seth Rollins wins, beats AJ Styles. And then he's on Raw. I don't know. But yes. I think it will just, I don't know. It will be a banger. But I feel like Rollins has been, like, kind of angling for this, like, the real world champion. Apologies to Ric Flair.
I haven't talked myself out of the Seth Rollins thing, despite, you know, what all the vignettes we've seen so far from both these guys. So I will side with you. I think Seth Rollins wins the inaugural World Heavyweight title, whether or not they kind of link it to one of these other titles. Who the heck knows? But it's a pretty stacked card. We got Becky Lynch, Trish Stratus, Cody versus Brock Lesnar Part 2, Gunther versus Mustafa Ali for the IC strap, Rhea Ripley versus Natalya for the SmackDown title, even though really Rhea Ripley's on Raw, and Bianca versus Asuka for the Raw Women's title, even though Bianca's on SmackDown. I guess they'll sort out the belts at some point later. But of course, we got the big KO, Sami Zayn versus Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa for the unified tag belts. Cracks beginning the show in the Bloodline. Obviously, something jump pops off this weekend. Do you have any predictions?
Yeah, I absolutely. No, I'm more confident in KO and Sammy retaining than I am anything else. I feel like the Usos will because they tried to interject themselves last week and Roman yelled at him, like he's their daddy, and I feel they're gonna say, okay, we gotta try to impress Roman one more time. It backfires, and I feel this is where the physical altercation begins. I think at the end. You're gonna, because I feel like this has to end. Does this end the pay per view, or does the belt?
No. You end the pay per view with the best story. And I was wondering, I was like, where do you put that Rollins AJ match? And I guess you put it a couple matches before this because you got to space it out a little bit. No, but this ends the pay per view because this is when you light the fuse, probably most likely for the Bloodline angle. And I think. I'm not sure, but I think I saw that the day of today, Night of Champions, I think that's the 1,000th day of Roman Reigns' reign.
I think
that's the day, if I'm not mistaken. And I think it's the day, I got to check the calendar, but it's something like almost to the day, like the same day that Seth Rollins turned on the Shield. So is this the time where you know, Roman's boy, new crew, turns on him again? It's something I think it's like the timing is almost perfect to the day.
I guarantee you, you're not the only person. I guarantee you that's probably in some war room in Stamford. Like, I don't know. I feel like I don't know. And thankfully, the Hunter era has been a little better of recognizing the past. Like, I don't know, because I think before, when the old man just was too senile to remember the past, like, I don't know, like the callbacks, like Finn Balor throwing Rollins into a barricade and saying, what is that? Like, I mean, that's a callback. And I feel that, like, you're going to get a callback. I feel like Roman will get some PTSD at the end where he feels like he's gonna be preemptive about it, where he thinks he's gonna get turned on by like the Shield did, and he's gonna go medieval on Yusuf.
Really quick, like 30 seconds. So Saturday today is the 1,000th day of the reign. So June 2nd is the day that Seth Rollins turned on Roman Reigns and the Shield. That's also the day of the SmackDown, this week's SmackDown episode. So Ooh. Maybe something pops off on that
no,
day. Maybe,
so, no, see, yeah. see, I guess my question is, darn it, we don't have time. But, yeah, like, right, I don't know, this is offline. But, no, like, it should, no, and, like, these Saudi pay-per-views have gotten a lot, or PLEs have gotten a lot better recently.
Yeah, they've gotten fantastic. We will have a ton of stuff to discuss next week here on the show. Same bat time, same bat channel, 106.5 FM, WPPM LP Philadelphia, or wherever you get your podcast. But until next week, we are out of here. Mr. Domingo, take us out, please.
Have a great weekend, everyone.
See you guys. Happy Memorial Day.
Hey there, it's your friend Stormy Warren here, and I want to invite you to my new home, The Big 615, exclusively on TuneIn. So what is The Big 615? Well, simply put, it's the official home of country music broadcasting live from Nashville to the world. Download the TuneIn app from the App Store. That's TuneIn. And by the way, yes, it's free. You can also ask your device to play The Big 615 on TuneIn. Get the latest on country music, from your favorite artists to the hottest songs climbing up the charts. Oh, and it's commercial free. That means a whole lot more music and a whole lot more country. Hear it all on the Stormy Warren Show, weekdays from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central. Download the TuneIn app from the App Store. That's TuneIn. And by the way, yes, it's free. You can also ask your device to play The Big 615 on TuneIn. And I look forward to having you join me on The Big 615.
This is your country station.
The Big 615.